Hello and welcome back to another edition of ESPN Scrum Reset. This first of the official winter season, Christy Dora, which I guess really makes you feel like the big stuff's around the corner, the big rugby of the year. We know it doesn't get any bigger than World Cup years. Looking ahead to Rugby Championship in a few weeks' time. But the Super Rugby season, the regular season, is done. And after a pretty ordinary week last week, Christy, it didn't get much better in round 15. We're going to start straight off the bat in Sydney. You were at the Waratahs. I mean, I was on dad duty. But in the afternoon, I was thinking, you know what, this is the kind of game that the Waratahs could lose. What was on the line given Michael Hooper's farewell? Moana Pacifica, absolutely nothing to lose. Their own motivation with Aaron Major departing and Levi Almua as well. It just had that feel of a banana skin game. And that's exactly how it played out. And I think it was the worst performance from a Waratahs team that I can remember since 2007 when they lost to the Cheetahs on a slippery Friday night that forced the fan forum. Mate, it was grim, and I don't suppose it was any better being out there.
It wasn't. I had a real fear that I was going to be the only person in the press box until about 3 or 4 minutes before kickoff. it was a late arrival, and it was actually a good turnout. It was probably a later turnout. Like, people rolled through the gates a bit later than you might have expected. But yeah, poor game, abysmal game, really. And I was talking to someone else earlier today about this. It's three opportunities Sydney, the Wallabies, the Waratahs have had the opportunity to kind of bring back the faithful in the last 12 months. The new, the first test match at Allianz, Springboks Wallabies, first match of the super season against the Brumbies, and now this, a big game, as you mentioned, Michael Hooper's send-off, a reasonable showing. All three, they've absolutely fluffed their lines. That was a hard watch, and it was a slow motion car crash, I thought, right the way through, and there was barely a player that left with their stocks up. Michael Hooper certainly gave it his all. Ned Hannigan played reasonably well, added some punch off the bench, but others are really, really poor showing. Mark Nwanganui Tawasi had his worst game, I think. Ben Donaldson was poor. The midfield hardly saw it. Izzy Parisi wasn't sighted until he walked off with the hip injury. It was a disaster, and it was summed up by Darren Coleman's despondent kind of attitude following the match when he addressed the media and was pretty devastated by what he had just seen.
Yeah, embarrassed was the word I think he used. You might be able to tell us more from that presser, but made the point of it was also the junior club's march past. So you've got, I don't know, a couple of hundred kids there maybe doing a lap of all the junior clubs from around Sydney, and I think even further afield, a couple might have come in from the country. What a weekend for those kids. And as Darren said, you turn on that shit. And it was shit. It was garbage. It looked like a team that hadn't spent any time together whatsoever. There were a couple of changes there, but he didn't make any excuses around that from what I understand. And Matt, I don't know whether you saw it at one point in the second half, there was a close-up of Ben Donaldson. And it really looked like the camera was steering through his eyes. It was a bloke with a look whose confidence is at the moment is shot, I thought. Well down. I think there was one point there where he tried to throw a little short ball to a forward perhaps that wasn't expecting it, and there was a real tense kind of exchange around that was what happened there. That just blatantly wasn't the right play I was trying to run. I feel for Ben Donaldson, and I wonder how much is going back to that misconversion against Italy last year there in Florence. He certainly hasn't looked the same player this year as last. I think he's well down that fly half pecking order, probably now at number five at best. And I'm starting to think that this switch to the force might actually be the best thing for him. I think he needs a complete refresh, a complete reboot, because that was a very, very poor showing the other night. And as I said, it felt like you could see the pain in his eyes that he wasn't enjoying it, and he had no kind of confidence that it was going to get any better.
Yeah, and I've written this morning about Darren Coleman's real test of faith now. this weekend, Friday rather, with the quarterfinal. He's got a couple of big decisions to make, because you're quite right, Ben Donaldson's, I think, shot and hasn't had a good game all year. I think he was okay, I think, against the Drua, where he finished the match strong. It might have been against the Rebels. But, with the exception of that, really hasn't shown much, hasn't asserted himself, hasn't controlled the proceedings. And the tempo was an issue on the weekend. And the other big test of faith is Mark Nolling and Awasi on playing at fullback. Coleman's got to decide, and he doesn't have many options after Max Jorgensen's injury and Izzy Parisi's hip concern, which might mean that he doesn't train this week and probably very doubtful to play on Friday. But, knowing Nuasi, a couple of drop balls, passes behind his attacking line into touch. Who else does he turn to? Potentially Donaldson at fullback, who started the season against the Brumbies in the 15 jersey with Tane Edmund at 10. I think Nwanga Nwasi is certainly best suited on the wing, but does he go, you know what, I don't think Donaldson's my man. We haven't even offered him a contract next year, which would match the Wallabies' requirements for a top-up, which I think is $215,000. Tars don't think he's worth that much. And he's playing like a person who's being told, you know, not actually good enough to be our 10 next year. Does the Waratahs just rip the Band-Aid off now and go, you know what, I don't think you're the person that can help us take us to the quarterfinal? I'm not sure. I think he'll certainly be part of the 23. Does he go to fullback, Tane Edmund coming to 10? I think Edmund's playing better. He's shown glimpses of what he can do off the bench. But it's a really, really big, big call this weekend. He'll probably be making it by Tuesday, you would imagine. Lalakai Fekete will help with his crucial next weekend. But, wow, like, it's a huge mountain. And we were talking about it on the weekend. The Waratahs have won once at Eden Park since Super Rugby started. I think it was 2009. So one from 14. Their previous victory before that was way back in 1928 when New South Wales won across the ditch at Eden Park. So they're not just up against history, they're up against a mounting injury toll. We've got Harry Johnson-Holmes and a syndesmosis injury. That's always niggly. He'll be out for a while. Jed Holloway's 50-50. Langy Gleeson's 50-50. Jake Gordon's out with concussion. We know Max Jorgensen's out. Looks like Izzy Parisi's up against it as well. It's a really, really difficult thing. And Teddy Wilson, who's just been with the Junior Wallabies, might as well stay across the ditch, because he's probably going to be heading back there this weekend, probably as the replacement backup nine for Goddard. So it's a huge mountain to climb this weekend.
Yeah, really limping into the quarterfinals. And I guess it was always the concern, or is the concern, with this eight-team format, is that that's going to be the case for a few teams. It's certainly the case for the Reds, who scrape in there and have got the Chiefs first up. We know they beat them in New Plymouth the other week, which was their best performance of the season. It's failed to see how they can repeat that. They were just absolutely steamrolled by the Drua in the end, weren't they, earlier on Saturday afternoon. Fully expected the Fijian Drua to win this one. Reds hung in the contest for first half and early in the second, but after that, it was one-way traffic. It was a comfortable 41-17 victory for the Drua, which on the flip side is great for the competition. This is a second-year franchise who's probably performed above expectations, although we did expect them to improve this year. I know Simon Raualua was confident that they were going to give the quarterfinals a good shake. You've got to tip your hat to Mick Byrne. Sure, they've only won five of their six games at home to get the job done, and got the win over Moana and at Auckland at the start of the year. Had a couple of other hidings along the way, but some of the Aussie teams as well. So a big ups to the Drua, but it's hard to see how either of those two teams go to the Reds going to Hamilton, and the Drua trading the steamy, wet conditions of Suva for the wet, cold conditions of Christchurch, and probably single digits there on Saturday afternoon. You fully expect these two games will be fairly comprehensive defeats for the Reds and Drua respectively.
You'd think so. The big decision for the Reds is what they do at 10-12. I thought, you know, James O'Connor really struggled at 10 with the greasy conditions. There had obviously been a fair bit of rain around Suva on Saturday, but he struggled moving one position closer to the action. I think the Reds built their victory, and we discussed this a couple of weeks ago, on a brilliant kicking game, good kick chase. I would be bringing Tom Liner back in at 10, yep. Having O'Connor at 12, Paisami at 13, and Josh Fluke out on the wing. I think they just need to make sure that their exits are brilliant, that their kicking game is astute, and that they're well organised. And we're seeing that from Liner, and we're seeing O'Connor look more comfortable one further out. Defensively, he's generally been pretty good despite being palmed away once or twice on the weekend. But you're right, big challenge. You can't see them getting close. Or, you know, the Chiefs didn't rest as many for that defeat against the Reds as they did on the weekend, but they were missing that evening in New Plymouth. Samson Ioane, Tokiaho, Sam Kane, I think Peter Gasol was still there as well. Brody Retallick was, I'm pretty sure, missing too. Yep. And you take away those four, that's your go forward, your momentum. That'll help, obviously, astronomically this weekend. And the Reds are just travelling everywhere from New Zealand to Queensland, Queensland to Suva, to Queensland to clearly back over to Auckland, and then probably drive out to Hamilton. Tough task. I think the Fijians will, you know, if they can, it could be a really interesting 20 minutes and potentially 40 minutes. If the Fijians, who've got plenty of hard hitters, bone crunchers, it'll be a fascinating 40 minutes. Now, I can't see Fiji coming close in the end, but I can see them, if they start well and accurately and have a little bit of confidence and just manage to slow the Crusaders, that they might actually be able to scare them a little bit. But that class will begin to show for the Crusaders. And we saw a couple of guys like Sam Whitelock coming off at halftime on the weekend. He's probably departure allowed the Hurricanes to come in back into it, and a good win for the Hurricanes in the end. But you're right, those two are pretty obvious. Can the Waratahs get close to the Blues, Brucey?
I don't think so, Christy. No, I don't think the Blues are playing that well. To be honest, I think of the three teams, certainly the top three there, I see the Crusaders and Chiefs being superior, and I still expect that to be the final. They were pretty patchy against the Highlanders on Friday afternoon, I thought, the Blues, Friday night over there. Look, as you said, history's well against the Waratahs and against the Reds too, given what we know about the playoff stat for Aussie teams that we dropped last week. I remember that game that they won. I'm pretty sure Daniel Helenahu, who coincidentally is now the Blues assistant coach there in Auckland, had a really fine game for that victory. Kicked really well from the kicking tee, from memory, about 2009, you said it, I think. You just don't want to see a 50-point blowout, do you? You'd love to see them make a game of it to halftime, and then just the sheer weight of injuries that they've got, the toll of the last few weeks. They didn't have Michael Hooper last time around mid-season. He was rested from that game. I think that'll make a big difference. The couple of guys there, 50-50, you said, if they can get potentially Gleeson, Parisi, you just cut out there. Paquetti, is he a chance or not?
I think, yeah, Paquetti's obviously missed the last couple. I think he is a chance.
So that would help. I think it's going to be hard yakka for them. I can't see, you know, but 20 points is probably going to be a good result to be within of the Blues. The Brumbies, mate, they beat the Rebels on Friday night. Wasn't the Brumbies at their best, and that's clearly the game of the weekend, isn't it? The Brumbies and Hurricanes in Canberra. Hurricanes finding a bit of form late. They were good, as you mentioned, in that second half against the Crusaders after Cody Taylor's dismissal and Dane Coles proving to be the absolute pest that he is right to the finish. That was cracking. If you haven't seen that, go and seek it out in the second half of Cody Taylor and Dane Coles, have been mates and teammates at the All Blacks for years, having a little disagreement and Dane Coles eventually winning it when he baited Taylor into a bit more push and shove, and he got 10 minutes in the bin. The Hurricanes have got strike power, haven't they? And that's what could worry the Brumbies if they can't kind of do what they did to the Rebels, probably not as we expect them to do quite so well as put the squeeze on teams in Canberra, defend really well. They scored a couple of tries off mistakes down one end and moved the ball upfield. It doesn't kind of feel like the Brumbies are the same team that were really impressive through that first 6 or 7 weeks of the competition. Can they get back there this week? I think they'll need to go close to beat this Hurricanes team who, you know, will just ride off the back of Sevilla. Coles will be absolutely like he was. He'll be a pest around the breakdown and niggle and infuriate. You know, that the number eight, Braden Yossi as well, he's going to be kind of that natural replacement for Artie Sevilla when he's on sabbatical next year. Roy Guard's had a really good season at nine, hasn't he? Jordy Barrett, perhaps not at his best, I don't think, probably this Super Rugby season. How that affects his All Blacks midfield chances, who knows? But, yeah, there's enough in this Hurricanes team to I think this game probably goes down to the last 5 or 10 minutes, to be honest. It's the pick of the weekend, as we said. The competition probably needs it to be close and an engaging contest that draws in the fans, because you figure that there might be some early switch-offs with the other three. I still think I'll tip the Brumbies, but it's a matter of points. I think it's sort of 3 to 5 points max.
Yeah, history shows that the Brumbies have got a pretty good record against the Hurricanes at home. They went across the ditch a couple of months ago and they played well. A couple of interesting decisions. I think it was from Dolman, the referee.
He's a lottery, that bloke.
Which helped the Hurricanes win. But I agree. I think it'll come down and the front row for the Hurricanes will be really interesting to see whether or not guys like Moore come back in that really help stiffen up that forward pack and that scrum particularly. No, Alan Alatoa really hurts the Brumbies. He's a leader. I think it was a smart decision for James Slipper to have the week off. Obviously, he had the birth of his first child just recently as well, so that was well aligned. But you're right, they'll have to be at their absolute best. And I think it comes down to that type five battle. You know, Caden Neville, the likes of Nick Frost, so crucial. The player that I'm going to watch probably is Tom Hooper. I think he's a Wallabies bolter, and we might touch upon a few bolters later on in this chat, but he's a guy that is one of the few players that I've seen, and he was doing this last year before an injury, I think in the semi-final, where he's getting over the gain line and you go, oh, it's interesting. He doesn't look massive, but he actually makes a real dent. And think of guys like Dan Vickerman, who used to just have that great punch and ability to dent the gain line. And he's someone who similarly has that, but he also has work rate, great work rate. So that's a really intriguing kind of matchup, but we know that the Hurricanes are going to go really hard at the ball, and they've had a pretty good preparation, the Brumbies, because the Rebels smashed the Brumbies in that area in that first 20 minutes. Brad Wilkin, Richie Hardy really came into their own. And unfortunately, I think the Rebels had just shot as soon as they lost both their hookers. And Hardwick, he's probably got a better throw than Jordan Walisi, which is saying something, but he should never throw to the front of the line out again, because twice he got pinged for not being straight, and that were the only two times, I think. So, yeah, big game for the Nines particularly. It'll be an interesting one to see whether or not Stephen Larkham goes back to Noel Alessio at 10, because I think Jack Debrasini is showing some good form. Great ball to Corey
Tool, wasn't it? Yeah.
Away. Really just pulled the trigger on that right to left pass. Tool showed what he can do with his finishing ability. There's no one better in tight confined spaces than Tool with 10 meters to work with. Who am I backing? Dear, it's a tight one. Could we see all four New Zealand sides? That's a strong prospect. I think the Brumbies record in Canberra is exemplary. That's maybe the one thing that holds them in good stead, Nick White being there. But they'll have to be at their absolute best to get past this, because the Hurricanes, Billy Proctor is probably the one I'm watching from a Hurricanes perspective. So good on the ball and great on both sides of the ball, defensively and offensively as well. You're needing a strong kick chase game and having a really rock solid line. Big high stakes game, and the one blessing that Eddie Jones has from a disappointing, underwhelming Super Rugby season is the fact that he most likely will get the crux of his players by the end of this weekend.
We've been saying that for 10 years though, Christy, right? And look what happened. So
The difference being is that Eddie Jones really hasn't had his hands on anyone yet. That's the one difference in this exception is, yes, Michael Checker had the same thing in 2019 and 2015, and there were two sides in the semi-finals. But obviously Eddie Jones hasn't coached a test yet with the Wallabies.
Just quickly on the Rebels and Force wrap up their seasons. I think, obviously failures that they haven't made playoffs. But are they trending in the right direction when you consider some of the players they've got coming next year? Obviously the Rebels have got Taniela Tupu in BAM, which will further strengthen that pack. The Force, Nick White, Ben Donaldson in all likelihood.
Will Harris.
They're going to be better next year. And they've showed glimpses, both teams this year, that the Rebels were, what, 3, 4, 5 games maybe where they were right in the contest for 70, 65, 70 minutes and couldn't finish the job. So they were probably, that one win, as it's proved, short of where they needed to be. Force very strong at home until the weekend when they were very poor in that opening 40 against the Chiefs and paid the price. At the same time, have played one or two very good halves of footy. It's about building that consistency and that 80 minutes of performance that hopefully might result in some improved showings next year. Any thoughts, I guess, final thoughts rather on their seasons?
I think upsides for both. The Rebels particularly, I think, for once we're starting, like, that narrative has shifted from whether or not they should be in the competition to this is an exciting team to watch. And you're right about them being in the contest for a lot of the games. You think about the Hurricanes, they came within a try, a super round, and they led at halftime against both the Crusaders and the Blues. Depth was their issue, and we'll see, hopefully, added depth with Rob Liotta, who didn't play a match all season, yep. Lucan Salakai-Loto, Taniela Tupou. Sure. You think about those three forwards that will come into the mix.
That's looking like a really good pack next year, isn't it?
Yeah, and when you get someone like Carter Gordon, who's going to get quick ball, his younger brother Mason, who's showing some skills at the moment for the Junior Wallabies. Think about Andrew Kellaway, Lockie Anderson improving. There are some Darby Lancaster coming into that mix. There are some really positive things that are happening with the Rebels, and it comes down to, once again, I think stability in coaching structure, as well as continuity with players, guys that have played together before. You think about Alex Murphy's played with Taniela Tupou, who's played with Lucan Salakai-Loto. There's a bit of a Reds flavour that's come down. And maybe that's a conversation for another day. As for the Force, their issues have simply come down to the fact that they can't scrum. They can't scrum and they don't have a tight five when they're missing one or two of their key players. So, yes, there's a couple of young props that are emerging coming through, but they're going to need one more prop. I'm not sure who it is just yet. Does Ollie Hoskins end up there? Clearly, the London Irish are in serious danger from going under. I'd be looking to stiffen up that pack with one or two guys that you can just find that's going to help with your front row stocks. That's their major, major area that they need to improve on. Rajan Passatoa to come back into the mix as well. Whether or not he's a 10 or a 12, we'll see. They've got decisions to make about their fullback options as well. So lots of balls up in the air for the Western Force regarding their recruitment at the moment. But I think Simon Cron's the sort of person that you can already see. Isaac Rodder came into the mix really late. We're going to see some better players continue to come there, and I think they're doing that because of Simon Cron and just the ability to upskill players and have them play for a cause, and that shift of mindset, which has been pretty important all season.
Yeah, and that work starts today for Simon Cron and Kevin Foote, already looking to 2024, but probably a beer or two for the players of both sides, and not Mad Monday, but a quiet ale. One or two. Mate, all right, we're going to whip through, I guess, a bit of a combined team of the season. Some really strong performances, I think, to off the top from individual players as we go through to just, you know, set the scene, I think. But if we start up front, probably loose head prop, you're thinking James Slipper, Matt Gibbon, with Slips on top there?
Unquestionably. Slips just, you know, tick straight away. He'll be, you imagine, you're starting loose head against the Springboks, no doubt about that, potentially captain. But, easiest decision we'll probably make in this Super Rugby team of the year.
Gibbon done enough to be in that wider World Cup squad, I guess, consideration, because they're going to need, what, probably seven props in that squad?
Probably, yeah. I think he has done enough. Good on the ball. Not a big guy, but strong. I think Angus Bell will be back in time. I can't see anyone else. You know, potentially, I can't see Scotty Seo. From my conversations that I've had with various people, I don't think Scotty Seo has been strongly looked at unless there was one or two more to go down, like a Slipper, which you can understand because you can't pick 1,000 from overseas. You've got to reward guys that are here doing the business, I think.
Lachie Lonergan at hooker, I think, has probably been the standout throughout the year. A guy that probably has still got that concern. Is he a little underweight, a little small for the Test arena? Perhaps he can prove the critics wrong over the coming months into that World Cup to really nail down that starting spot. It'll be interesting to see how he's factored in there by Eddie Jones with Dave Parecki, who's kind of more known for that line-out surety, strong set piece, not as dynamic around the field as Lockie, clearly, which way they go there at Test level, but Lockie at number two in the team of the season.
Yeah, I think that's pretty simple enough. Like, Matty Fesler's done well throughout the year. He's probably been the big mover. His line-out throwing has been really good. Unfortunately, probably the biggest mistake he's made was against the Drua on the weekend, where it sealed the match when he threw it over the top. And I think it was Tavita, Kieran, not Johnny, but I forget his last name. But the hooker there is vice captain of the Drua, sealed the deal.
Canavera, who had a hell of a season. I think he'd be my hooker of the year, to be honest.
Yeah, excellent season. Great with the ball, Carrie. Thanks for helping me out there, Brucey. But yeah, I think Lonergan too. Vianga didn't play enough. Parecki probably didn't play enough either. And maybe just the fact that the Brumbies had a better year than the Waratahs helps Lonergan squeeze in. Murphy started the year well too, but yeah, Lonergan.
Tight head prop. Obviously, we know Allen has had some injuries on top of Wallabies rest. Tupu didn't play at all. Is Sam Talakai the big mover here? I guess you'd probably say Alan Alatau is still in that team of the year, but is Talakai the big mover in terms of Wallabies moving forward?
I think so. If Alan Alatau is not fit, and I still think there's a big if, because calf injuries, we know that Taniela Tupo was, that calf injury kept him out for a long time last year. They're kind of niggly things. And although Alan's speaking optimistically, you don't want to risk it against the box, do you? So we'll see what happens there. But I think Sam Talakai has probably been the most consistent player. I think he's certainly in the mix. Great for culture. Fits that character that Eddie Jones is talking about. We got to get five really good guys in the group if they're not going to be regularly playing in a World Cup. So certainly he fits the bill there. I would have him, you know, probably just ahead of Alan Alatau, actually, in this super team of the year. Not saying that I would be playing him in front of Alan come a test match, but just for what they're doing this year.
That Rebel scrum was really solid all year, and that's not something we've associated with that franchise probably at all previously in Super Rugby. So he deserves a rap there, Sammy Talakai, and, every chance he's on that flight to Paris later in the year. At lock, I think Nick Frost selects himself there, certainly number one, alongside, you know, is it Caden Neville? Is it Jed Holloway, who probably trailed off towards the end of the year? Jed, do you think his form a little bit looked like he needed a break after that Crusaders game? Certainly that one, I think you mentioned on last week's pod, trailing back after a turnover, looked like he was short of a gas after about 12 or 15 minutes. Otherwise, looking around the place, you probably have to say Josh Canham. He's not there yet, and I don't think he'll come into World Cup considerations, but he's a player for the future, isn't he?
Oh, he's a good player, exciting player. Basketball skills and I think Jeremy Williams is another one. Those two are probably most improved in that area. Trevor Hosea at times. Unfortunately, he's leaving to Suntory. But, yeah, I think Nick Frost is the most obvious candidate, maybe just ahead of Jed Holloway, who had a shocker against the Crusaders 50-50 this weekend as well. He'd be huge out if he doesn't play for the Tars. I'd go Frost and Neville there.
Back row, you'd have to say Fraser Wright at number seven. I think we don't feel like he's probably going to be picked ahead of Michael Hooper, or certainly that's not how I see it. But he's the man, he's the heir apparent. We've known that for quite some time. But his performances for the Reds in a Reds team this year that has turned into, you know, four or five fairly ordinary performances, he's been the standout. And then when they have played well, he's been largely a reason driving that performance as well.
Yeah. Fraser McWright, seven, hands down. And then Hooper's built into it, been pretty consistent over the last 6 weeks. And Brad Wilkins played well too. I think Rory Scott at times. Carlo Tizzano had a shocker on the weekend, but a couple of good games there before that. But yeah, Mick Wright at seven. I think six, Robbie Valentini's predominantly been at six. So I'd go Valentini there. I'd pick him at six.
Do we think his form was probably a little down on last year, or was it just that last year was so good that we expected that same again, and perhaps in between a couple of rests along the way, he probably hasn't been quite so dominant? I mean, every game last year, it felt like, and probably even the season before, it felt like he was in the 3-2-1 conversations every week, if not 3 points every week.
And I still think he is. I just think he's so consistent these days that when you don't see him make 10 bollocking runs straight through the middle, smoking through defenders, you go, well, what's he doing? But he's awfully often taking that hard carry as well. I think he's been very good. He's one of the first picks for the Wallabies at the moment. I'd go Valentini. I still think he's in that conversation of most weeks being the Brumbies' best. And that's very hard when you're picking teams of the week to go, well, you know, because someone else is stand out, do you just give him a participation award? No, I think he's been brilliant. The other one that I'd pick in that back row, you wouldn't be picking this as a test squad, but clearly just for what their deeds have been in the Super Rugby season this year, I'd have Richard Hardwick. I know he missed it quite a few weeks, but I'd have him at eighth in my team of the year this one. I would have him ahead of Harry Wilson, yeah.
Ahead of and Langy Gleeson, of course.
And Langy, geez. Well, Langy's been far out. Once you throw that in, okay, Langy Gleeson. And I'm going to do it only because Dickie Hardwick is now switched to Namibia. I'll go Langy Gleeson at eight. He's been, every time that he's played, he's been excellent.
And two completely different kind of players, aren't they? Langy, where he's ball carrying, his big hits coming out of the line and sitting guys on their backs behind that gain line, the big carries he's made, you know, a number of really sort of 30, 40-metre breaks, hasn't he, off that line-out ball or perhaps first phase on a short tip-on. So interesting to see, we've been talking about it all year, the makeup, how Eddie approaches his back row, whether we will see a Valentini shift to six and to accommodate Langy there. There's concerns, I think, maybe still around his work rate potentially at test level, repeat efforts, but I guess we'll see that in the coming months. Number nine's a tough one because we know Nick White and Ryan Lonergan have probably split the year almost down the middle, it feels like. I don't have the exact numbers in front of me, but Lonergan certainly had sort of six, seven starts maybe. You would think. Tate McDermott's been very good in the big moments for the Reds. Whenever they've won, a bit like McWright, he's been the man to drive it. Jake Gordon, I thought, got better as the year went on. Probably a little bit of a slow start. But again, as when the Waratahs have have needed a player to stand up, it's been the skipper, hasn't he? So that's a tough one at nine.
Yeah, I think you've nailed it. I don't know if I could add much more to it. I think all of them have had their moments, including Tate McDermott, Isaac Fiennes, Leliuaso has been very good as well, probably the most improved, a guy that's actually entered conversations. And I'll tell you what, I don't think Eddie would do it, and there's probably enough options as it is, but when you think about configurations of test squads, you think about at times you get a little bit crafty around, you know, particularly with all the concussions. Isaac finds Leloasa can play on the wing as well, and it's probably why his tackling percentage rate's best out of all the halfbacks, is because he's actually defended on the wing for a long time too, scored by Laurie Fisher and Dan McKellar before going back to the Force. And he's a guy that's a very crafty nine, good pace, can inject himself. It's not beyond the realms of possibilities that he somehow makes it into a Wallaby squad, because he can cover nine and on the wing as well, in a way that I think it was Francois Hougaard used to do for the Springboks. What's your space on that one? Gordon's been good, but I think at times he's overplayed his hands with the Waratahs. I think the Brumbies played some of their worst rugby without Nick White. So I'm going to go Nick White as my nine for that reason.
And we know how much of a fan Eddie Jones is of Nick White. So you can guarantee who's going to be your starting nine there. Come, not necessarily first up out of the gate in Pretoria, but I'd be very surprised if on the big games this year, Nick White's not in that gold number nine jersey. 10, I think this is probably the easiest selection of the lot, right? A player... I think it was probably last year when we came out after that COVID Trans-Tasman series of 2020. And the game that stands out for me was the Rebels, and I think it was the Chiefs at Leichhardt when Victoria...
Crusaders, I think.
Or was it the Crusaders? So, well, I think they played both teams there, actually, because we know what happened with Victoria during the lockdowns. And there was just a couple of moments in those, perhaps it was both games, and you thought, this kid's got something. And it was raw at that point. It didn't have the muscle, the frame on it at that point, but you thought, I can see Carter Gordon being a potentially, you know, big player in Australian rugby for this upcoming decade. We probably had to wait another year, but as of this year, it's clear to say there's excitement right around this guy. And when I think the big thing, Christy, is that when the plaudits started to come on, he didn't drop. The consistency this year has remained, you know, right up there throughout the year. Defensively, a fly half in Australian rugby. I can't think someone who's been putting his body on the line like this for quite some time. His beautiful passing game. He's been kicking well. He looks the full package. He's clearly going to need time to grow into being a test player, but he's my player of the season and an easiest selection of the lot at number 10.
Oh, yeah. I agree. And you know what? He's a golfer as well. I think he plays off near scratch.
And, of course he is.
And I think and I'm not a great one, but it's such a game played with the mind. Skill set for sure, but go a really low scratch kind of golfer, you've got to be bang on with your mental kind of fortitude. And we're seeing that, like those sorts of characteristics of him being really composed out in the field, unflappable at times, a good decision maker, and consistency. And we've seen all of that this year. So he's been outstanding. 10 best player for Australian rugby in that position by a country mile.
On the wings, there's been no shortage of I think, strong performances throughout this year, but you'd probably say Corey Toole. On that left wing, sadly, we might not see him this week under a bit of an injury cloud. Seemed to pick up, was it an ankle or a calf injury there on Friday night? Right from the outset, that game that you and I were both at to open the season against the Waratahs, when he and Jorgensen both lit up Allianz. Interesting to see, he wasn't in that Wallabies squad, was he, in April? I wonder where Eddie's concerns are around him. Is it just a size factor for Test Rugby? but there's no one quicker in the game. I don't think in Super Rugby, probably full stop. He's got that real burning acceleration, doesn't he? Scored a mountain of tries this year, showed his class on the sevens circuit and the ability to really hit breakdowns. And as Johnny Manenti told me, it's one gun, one shot sort of thing in the sevens, and how valuable that can prove in at 15s as well. And Mark on the other, on the right wing, Christy, is that how you say?
Yeah, Corey Toole for sure on the left wing. It reminds me of Cheslin Colby, and everyone has always said that Cheslin Colby's not big enough. I think he certainly showed that he, you know, size isn't everything. On the right wing, Marky Mark hasn't helped himself for the last couple of weeks, but I think he just gets, you know, maybe ahead of even a Lachie Anderson, who's been really good for consistent, the Rebels, yeah, in 2023. He's a guy that just couldn't catch a cold in his first 2 years of Super Rugby. Made the transition from sevens, was a good player. I think Hoyles, he spoke on the weekend or maybe the weekend prior, that he thought he was potentially a back rower, but would be a better suited to being a back rower. And maybe we saw a bit of that with those teething issues transitioning over to the wing, but he's been great this year. Great finishing ability, good over the balls. I think a bit unlucky on the weekend with getting over one, but he was one of the bigger movers this year. But I'd go Nawanga Niduasi just, on that right wing.
Probably an honourable mention to Andy Muirhead there as well, who seldom has a bad game. Perhaps doesn't have the highlight shrill, but a fairly solid finisher. In the centres, 12 is a tough one, isn't it? Because you think of the injuries through the year, we probably haven't seen quite as much as Lalakai Fekete. Had a really good game against the Reds there in Townsville. It's probably the one that stands out for me throughout the year. The Rebels have been through a few. The Force have had, who's been playing 12 for them? Hamish Stewart, for the most part. Tamati Tour at the Brumbies. They're kind of all at a similar level this year. But I guess if you're picking an Aussie, is Fekete just shaved Stewart without really playing the house down?
Yeah, he would. I think he's actually been better than what you're saying. But I think the fact that the Tars, he was actually probably the best Waratah outside of Nawanga Niduasi in that first 6 weeks when they were really struggling.
Yeah.
You know, it was Parisi that just was dropping ball on contact and the wingers weren't touching it. Fekete was all right during that period. I would go him certainly at 12. Stewart shown a fair bit at times, but then other times, a couple of balls that have been intercepted and maybe just not quite the management required. Maybe still a few teething issues with the cohesion, brand new team, shuffling between 10 and 12. Tua's been pretty good without being exceptional, I think. Quite a few times he's been intercepted. Not incidentally, he's rushed out of defence and been caught kind of exposed there, and then a couple of balls dropped in contact too, but he's a bigger body, and we saw that last week against the Chiefs where he managed to kind of crash over Brad Weber with Lenny Ikitau then scoring off the offload. So good play for the Brumbies. He's going to be an important player this weekend for them to line up against the Hurricanes to kind of add that physicality that's required.
Lenny Kitau's an easy one at 13. We know he's probably in the top three outside centres in the world right now, let alone in Super Rugby. Just a brilliant defender, a guy with an offload who more often than not beats that first defender. He's got footwork, offload, as I said, he's got speed. Can burn you on the inside, the outside, and defensively is just really, really solid. Along with Gordon, probably the other really easy selection of the year.
Yeah. And Josh Bluke's done well. I'm really impressed. I think he's a good player. But yeah, Lenny Ikitau just has got it all. And he's probably inside your first five top players, picked players for the Wallabies, I'd say. Another easy one.
Fullback. Tom Wright.
Tom Wright.
Andrew Kellaway. You've gone Tom Wright. Okay. That's. I think we can agree on that. It was better on the weekend after a pretty patchy performance last week, wasn't he? Good to see him bounce back. And as we, another one of those Brumbies, he'll need to be really, really strong this weekend if they're to beat the Canes. All right, mate. It's a pretty good 15. Let us know if you've got any changes to that on social media. Call us out if there's been any grave errors or players overlooked there, we'd love to hear it. So, yeah, give us a shout. A couple of interesting things from an Australian rugby, a wider sphere last week, Christy. Before we get to Phil Waugh, who we know you mentioned before was in all likelihood going to be the man to replace Andy Marinos as Rugby Australia CEO, Eddie Jones seemed to be really enjoying himself back at Twickenham last week and doing the media rounds again, catching up with all the old English journos there's probably what, 8 to 12 of them who had a sit down with him at a hotel in that style that they do. Very kind of intimate setting. And then he appeared on the Evening Standard rugby podcast midweek with Lawrence Dallaglio and a couple of others and dropped the bombshell, we'll call it a bombshell, that win or lose, the World Cup, after the World Cup, would probably be the time to step away. I've stayed too long in Australian rugby before and I don't want to make that mistake before. Now, for a guy who's signed a five-year deal through to 2027, who may hand over a coaching position and move into a director of rugby, we think that could have been the plan at some point. This was certainly had tongues wagging at Rugby Australia and a few other places. To me, though, I immediately thought this is a classic Eddie Jones distraction tactic. I've just come off a weekend where the Waratahs and Brumbies have been soundly beaten, where the players, we're going to be drawing the players from probably the lion's share of the players rather for the Wallabies. Very poor weekend. Suddenly people weren't talking about that anymore. Suddenly people weren't talking about how, you know, probably one or two Aussie sides were going to scrape into the quarters and be beaten soundly this weekend as we expect. But it was all about Eddie and Eddie stepping away. And could Eddie do this to Australian rugby after he's been repatriated in favour of Dave Rennie? I just thought it was coaching 101 distraction from Eddie Jones. How did you see it?
Oh, I immediately got on the phone and called Hamish McLennan, who didn't pick up, called me moments later and asked what exactly he said. And I spoke to a few others that are close to Eddie, and I don't think anyone necessarily took it seriously, but, you know, when Eddie Jones speaks, people listen. One or two people did say, look, this is surely just Eddie saying, like having a laugh, and he's always just a master of mind games. And I think you're right. I think that is what it is. I think his whole mantra this year has been smash and grab. We're going to, you know, steal the World Cup. This is just a rare campaign in itself. And I'm not focused and thinking of anything beyond it. And he's repeatedly said it, and it's been a bit of a cop-out at times because you ask him around Joseph Swaley, oh, I'm not thinking about it. You know, you ask him around, you know, someone who might else be signing in 24, 25, look, I'm not thinking about it. I'm only thinking about, you know, October 28th and the day of the World Cup final. I think there's a fair bit of that to be said, but you never know if the Wallabies were to somehow win a World Cup. Potentially he thinks about it. I still think he goes through to a Lions series. It's been something that he's always wanted to do. I can't see him finishing up before 2025. And even if the Wallabies were to bomb out of the quarterfinals, I don't think that Rugby Australia would act on him either. They wouldn't act on him like they would have acted on Dave Rennie. He's an Aussie, first of all. His record speaks for itself. He's already done a hell of a lot of the game. You can see that from the traction that always does happen in the World Cup years, but it's been amplified by Eddie's return. But classic Eddie Jones mind games, I agree. And I actually think there's an element of him saying to the players here, guys, we can't be thinking about anything else other than the World Cup. I'm all in on this, and so should you. And I think there's a fair bit about that going on. And the other thing I do think of is Razzy Erasmus in 2018. He's just taken on the job a couple of months later, and he says, I'll resign unless the Springboks beat the All Blacks this weekend in Wellington. And that hadn't happened in years. Then the Springboks come out after being beaten by the Wallabies in Brisbane, and they go on to beat the All Blacks in a dramatic, fascinating game, and it just changes the whole course of the Springboks leading into their World Cup success. So mind games and mind games. Yeah, you never really know what direction Eddie Jones is going to turn in, and it probably makes the whole thing more fascinating perhaps even more difficult, but a journalist's dreams nonetheless.
Absolutely. We're going to have some fun and games with Eddie this year, you and I. I tell you, the bloke who will get it if they go at the quarterfinals will be Hamish McLennan, because Andy Marinos isn't going to be there to stamp up and front up and say, this is why we backed Eddie. Phil Waugh didn't make the decision from an individual perspective, probably had something to do with the board, but we all know. It's on you, mate. Finally, Phil Waugh, as I just mentioned, has looked on course for this role for some time. Has got progressed from the Waratahs environment. He's been working across multiple banks since his retirement. He knows the movers and shakers of Sydney. He's since joined the board, been a part of that rugby committee with Daniel Herbert and formerly Andy Marinos, working on different bits and pieces of the game and a lot on the Giddo Law framework. As part of that, this is going to get some criticism for this one, as much as it will praise, I think, because it's a return to, as Groudy, the late Greg Groudon, termed here for ESPN once upon a time, the Mossman rugby mafia. He's another CEO from the Shaw School on North Sydney here in Sydney, clearly New South Wales rugby faction. At the same time, as I mentioned, he's got really good business connections. He's a rugby man. He's been ensconced in the game for the past three decades. And he's a Wallabies and Australian through and through. So it depends which side you look at it. But interesting to see, how is he just merely going to be a puppet for McLennan? Will he be a strong leader, do you think? Will he go head-to-head with New Zealand rugby? Will he be more of a voice at the World Rugby meetings? I guess we'll find out in the future, but it's going to be an interesting one to watch.
Yeah, I think there's a number of people that aren't particularly impressed by this move, but I actually don't think it's the worst one. Phil Waugh is not going to be the person who's going to be making the massive calls. She's probably more of a trophy appointment than anything. This is a guy that can be the trophy boy for Hamish McLennan, go around to all the various meetings in World Rugby, recognisable, respected as a player. And I think that's what it is. How he stands up and if he needs to stand up to Eddie Jones is probably the big one. That relationship between CEO and coach is always a fascinating one. But we know amongst this is that Hamish McLennan is the real shot caller in this. And do you need two shot callers? No. We see it in the NRL. It worked pretty well with Peter Vallandis. He's calling the shots a lot of the time. So that'll be the fascinating element is how it worked long-term with Waugh and Jones. But look, it's the most obvious appointment. I think it'll probably be done middle of the week. But it certainly wasn't officially done last week, but it was certainly very much on its way.
Yeah, you're right to liken it to Vallandis. They're the two guys that have gone at each other, clearly, as we know, around the Sui Li'i stuff. But if you ask the average fan on the street with, I guess, a vested interest in both games, who is the leader of your code, they'd say Vallandis and McLennan rather than Abdo and previously Marinos. So it's very much, as you say, a trophy. I use the word puppet, perhaps a little stiff, but we know who's calling the shots in both codes, don't we? They've gone a little bit quiet of late, but I'm sure it'll pipe up when Sui Li'i does eventually cross codes again. All right, mate, I think that's a pretty good wrap on this week. Thanks again for your time. Quarterfinals to look forward to this weekend. As we said, I think that from an Australian perspective, it's all on the Brumbies. The Waratahs might have a dig for a little bit, but Reds are going to be up against it, even considering their win over the Chiefs earlier in the year. I'm going to go out on a limb and say the Brumbies will win.
Good. And look, let's hope they do. The competition needs it. Can't afford to have just four New Zealand teams. But anyway, we'll be talking about it this time next week. Can't wait.
Absolutely. Thanks, all. We'll talk to you then. Enjoy the rugby this weekend. And go the Brumbies.